and welcome to Changing the Narrative. I'm your host, David Reeves, and we are changing the narrative. We've been spoon-fed this narrative, a narrative of atheism, a narrative of naturalism, a narrative that you don't matter for years, for about the last 150 years. We are changing that narrative, and we're changing it back to truth every day here at the Wonder Center and Science Museum, as well as on these podcasts. I am so glad to welcome a friend today, Richard Robinson, who has an amazing story to tell. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, it is great to have you here and to share. Now, you actually live right down the road.
I live right down the road. I've been here my entire life. My family's been on the same piece of property for a little over 150 years.
Is that right?
Yes.
So, a rich history. I've lived in Middle Tennessee most of my life, but at the same time, I call it home. I was born in Charlotte, North Carolina, and yet all of my memories have happened within an hour of here.
Yeah.
So it's something special about this place.
It really is. It's home for me. It's history for me.
Yeah.
You know, I can go back four generations here.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
That's pretty neat. Tell me just a little bit about yourself. Give me a little bit about your background and what you're doing, and then we're going to back it up.
Well, again, I am a graduate of the University of Tennessee, majored in television production, ended up getting a master's degree in business after college, and have been working in the nonprofit industry for most of my career, either as an executive or as a fundraising executive. So that's just pretty much where I've spent my life.
Well, I love it. And I love it. And, you know, what I found is that we've had a nonprofit ministry since the time I was 18 years old. I had a passion for taking photos of space, astrophotography. Mm-hmm. We were just sitting before the podcast, like talking about photography, naming different cameras and lenses and mirrorless options and all of that. So I think we both have those interests in common.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, in the nonprofit world, it's like we are able to reach people and help people in ways that are very creative through these nonprofits.
Yes.
Through what you're doing, through what the museum is doing, and what our ministry is doing. But there's always a story behind that.
Sure.
And that's where I kind of want to now, let's pause, let's reset, and let's rewind to a moment in history that changed your life. And I just want you to just take a little time, share the story with us.
Well, you know, as I grew up in this nonprofit industry, I was working in the nonprofit wildlife conservation industry.
Okay.
And back in 1998, my first son was born. Okay. And he was born with a, it was quite traumatic for us, because we found out immediately after he was born, when we unwrapped him for the first time, that he had a problem. And what we found out was that he did not have a connection between his pulmonary artery and his heart.
Wow.
There was just a section missing. And the doctors took me into the hallway, and I had actually gotten sick while I was at the hospital, and I had a fever, and they wouldn't let me stay. They told me that you need to go home. You know, we can't keep you here. Yeah. And the doctor told me while I was in the hallway, he said, you know, we've looked at Luke. We know that he has this particular problem. We're not extremely sure that he will make it through the surgery that we've scheduled for 5 days from now. And you might want to consider making arrangements.
Whoa.
And, you know, that's a real eye-opening moment for a person. And I went home, slept that night, woke up the next morning, fever was gone, everything was fine. And I went and sat in front of a funeral home here in Dixon for about 3 hours, praying and crying.
Yeah.
And I just realized it at one moment that all the weight was taken from me, and I could just feel the presence of God, and I just stopped worrying. And it was a big eye opener for me, changed in my life.
Yeah.
Well, we went through with the surgery, and the surgery was supposed to take in about 4.5 hours, and we had actually gone in to pray over him in the surgical suite, which the surgeon was not quite in favor of. But we prayed with the entire surgical team, and about 2.5 hours into the surgery, the doctor comes out, and she looks like she's seen a ghost. Mm-hmm. And we thought, oh my goodness, she shouldn't be out this soon.
Yeah, something's gone wrong, possibly.
What? So she takes us into a consult room, and she says, I want you to know that Luke is fine.
Okay.
We're closing him up now. And she said, but I have to tell you what happened. So she said, she explained how they had, you know, opened him up, had the little chest spreader. And she said, you know, his heart's the size of a walnut.
Yeah.
She said, so I reached in. She goes, I lifted his heart. And when I did, his pulmonary artery just unrolled and fell into place.
Wow.
And through all the imaging studies that they had done on him, they were convinced that it wasn't even there. They had prepared cadaver tissue. And he was fine.
Is that right?
They created a connection to his heart.
Uh-huh.
It's all they had to do.
Yeah.
And they repaired 2 small holes. And then, like I said, he was just going to be fine after that. But my parents had come, and they had sent us to dinner.
Okay.
To get us away from the hospital. And a lady, while we were there, had come up to us in the restaurant. She goes, you have a sick child, don't you? And we said, yes. Mm-hmm. And they said, she said, well, God told me to come and speak with you.
Hmm.
She said, your son is going to be fine, and God has a purpose for him.
Really?
Yeah. And so.
But she didn't know.
She didn't know us at all.
She just
came from across the restaurant from a table on the other side of the room.
Seriously?
Absolutely.
Okay. So this was like a divine connection right here.
Yes. And so it was an amazing moment for us, and he exceeded all expectations from his surgery.
Okay.
So, you know, and then then we move on. You know, he has a couple of stents placed a couple of years later, and then right after his third birthday, he got really sick.
Okay.
And we rushed to the hospital again. We find out that he has leukemia.
Oh my goodness.
And at the time, they sent us to Vanderbilt, where we were going to start treatment. And
at 3 years old.
At 3 years old. And then while we were there, the thought popped into my mind, you need to call St. Jude. So we called St. Jude. They said, can you get him here by 11 o'clock tonight?
Mm-hmm. I was
like, yes. So we flew down there, got him to St. Jude at 11 o'clock.
Okay.
And they had him started treatment the next morning. But when they came in to speak with us, they said, you know, he has 99% leukemia blast in his blood. We prayed over him again.
Mm-hmm.
19 days later, he's clean of leukemia, but still has to undergo 3 years of chemotherapy.
Yes.
And we almost lost him 4 times during that time period. But, you know, I never worried about him the way I did initially, because I knew God would take care of him.
Right.
So while he's at St. Jude, he's doing what every other kid does. He's watching TV with his mom, and he's drawing pictures and coloring and things like that. And then he developed these little comic book characters that he wanted to help the other kids not be afraid of the doctor. So he created this doctor named Dr. Shrink. And his sidekick, Super Shot.
Okay.
Well, it's about his comic was about a doctor mm-hmm. who was doing research on leukemia.
Okay.
And he and his son got into a lab accident and became superheroes. And they would go in and fight this villain called the evil virus.
Ah.
So okay. The story kind of goes forward. He got over his leukemia.
Yeah.
He's been clean now for 23 years.
Wow.
And but at 12, he finally got around to doing his Make-A-Wish. And when the Make-A-Wish Foundation was contacted about what he wanted, he wanted to do something with Marvel Comics. Well, Marvel had never done a Make-A-Wish because you couldn't make the brand work, because the kids always wanted to be made into a superhero
right.
and put into a comic.
Right.
Well, Make-A-Wish told them about Luke's comic that he had been drawing at St. Jude, and they said, well, send it to us.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing we know, 2 weeks later, they contact us. They say, we want to publish Luke's comic. So they assigned us an artist, and they assigned us a writer.
Wow.
We went and did creative meetings with them, and they developed Luke's comic book.
And
so the initial print, and I think I brought you one of those, 25,000 copies initially, and we placed them in children's hospitals.
Wow.
And it was just for the kids to help them not be afraid of the doctors.
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, a visiting physician from Poland was at Vanderbilt and picked up a copy of it.
Okay.
A few months after he picked up a copy of it, we get contacted by the Pediatric Oncology Association of Poland. They want to translate it and put it all in all the Polish-speaking communities throughout Europe.
Really?
For the children's hospitals.
Oh, my God.
And it has just gone from there.
How old was he at the time?
12.
He was 12 years
old? Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So he's touched millions of lives at this point.
Right.
Because I believe the last time I heard it was in about 92 countries. So it's just, how is he changing the narrative himself? And, you know, there are other stories about him. You know, there was a concert promoter, Christian concert promoter, that used to come to St. Jude, and they would raise money in their concert tours to build chapels in Ronald McDonald houses.
Okay.
And I'd taken a photograph of Luke in one of their chapels, and they fell in love with it and wanted to use it for the cover of their program for one season. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that season, they came back and they told us, they said, "We've never had more people come to our altar calls." And they all stated that his story and that image of him staring up at the cross just moved them.
Wow.
And so he continues to touch lives.
So changing the narrative, because this started with something where it was a touch and go moment from the very beginning. There were multiple times there where you had no idea what was happening next. And then through all of those challenges, through all of that, comes something that is touching the lives of millions around the world.
Yes.
It's incredible.
And I just love the way God works.
Yes.
You know, and he works through my son, and my son's not even putting effort into it. It's
right.
Just his story and his life.
Because he is willing to be used in that way, right? Oftentimes, I think about it, and I'm like, well, here I am sitting in the largest science museum in Tennessee. And if you would have told me 2 years ago, even just thrown this idea out, I would have probably laughed at you.
Yeah.
And yet I'm willing to do whatever the Lord calls, whatever doors are opened, right? I'm just trying to be available for that. And now all of a sudden it's a reality.
Yeah.
And here it is in Dixon, Tennessee. So in the same way, he was at least open to seeing what might happen next. And the Lord said, well, I can use this.
Yes.
And he's using that. Now, tell me a little bit more about you. Have you been a Christian most of your life? What is your faith journey?
You know, I grew up like most kids did in just a denominational church, Mount Lebanon United Methodist Church here in Dixon. Yeah. And, you know, when I went to college and I wasn't home very much, I obviously, like most college students, wasn't attending church very often. I would go to the Christian student unions of one kind or another. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that and then work life, and all of a sudden we tend to pull ourselves away sometimes. And just in the past few years, I've come back to, you know, from that journey, honestly, because I lost my mother about a year ago, and I just dove deep back into my faith, which led me to becoming the executive director of the Dixon Community Clinic, because I've gone completely back into my faith journey again.
Wow.
And so it's a transformational moment for me. I finally feel like I've found that ministry that I'm supposed to be involved in.
Yes.
And I think we all look for that. You know,
absolutely.
It's like, what does God want us to do?
Yeah.
And I think this is where I'm supposed to be at this point.
Absolutely. So the Dixon Community Clinic, tell me just a little bit about that.
The Dixon Community Clinic is a faith-based, nonprofit primary care facility for people who don't have insurance or can't afford to pay for health care.
Okay.
Which in Dixon County makes up about 12.7% of the population.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have one nurse practitioner and one nurse, and I have a community health worker and an interpreter, and we see about 3,200 patients a year right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay, so you're providing opportunities for those who might not be able to handle this on their own, or they may not have insurance. Tell me just a little bit more about that work and the kind of patients that you see. What, you know, how wide do you cover?
Well, you know, we cover an area, surprisingly enough, that's not just Dixon County. We touch Dixon County and seven other counties right now.
Is that right?
Where people come from all over to see us. And it's quite a load.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about 667,000 people roughly in those seven counties. And if you consider the possibility that as many as 15% or so of those are uninsured.
Right.
You know, if we really did our outreach, we wouldn't be able to handle the capacity.
Interesting.
So, but the Lord gives us, He gives us these patients. We have migrants that come to us. We have, people that are between jobs sometimes. They have no insurance coverage. We have people that absolutely cannot afford sometimes to even buy the gas to get there. And through some of the programs we have, we can actually provide them a gas card so that they can afford to put gas in their car to come.
So how does it operate? Is it like you said that sometimes you're able to provide gas for someone to get there?
Sure.
There are all kinds of programs. How do you?
Well, you know, our funding comes from a number of sources, primarily from individual donations, fundraising events, such we have a fall fundraising banquet and auction. We have a golf tournament that we run every year. Mm-hmm. This year they're doing a second motorcycle ride that's going to be there to raise money for us. But otherwise, we get money from some of the fees that we collect because we do ask our patients to contribute a little bit, $20 to be seen.
Yeah.
And if they can't, we have this donation box that sits by the window, the pay it forward box.
Wow.
That people just throw money in all the time.
Yeah.
So even if they can't afford it, some people, we just cover it for them because we have the generosity of the community that of those people that come in and just throw money in the box for us.
That's incredible.
And then we do grants as well. You know, we get some local and state grants.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Well, you know, I mean, there are so many worthy missions that anybody could choose. How did you decide this is what I'm supposed to be doing in this chapter of my life?
It's interesting because I was caught up in the pandemic. I had been working for Safari Club International.
Yeah.
And we were doing fundraising all over the country. I was traveling the country and the world for
them. That's a nonprofit.
For them.
Yeah.
Yes. Nonprofit wildlife conservation organization. And when the layoffs came, they laid off roughly 78% of the staff of Safari Club.
Oh, wow.
And I was caught up in that group of layoffs. And when the pandemic was over, they had just sort of changed the model of how they were employing. And so a lot of us didn't go back. And my sister, surprisingly enough, who is the nurse practitioner at the clinic, she said, you know, we need a fundraiser and you might want to talk to these guys about becoming a fundraiser. So I did. And they invited me to come and serve as a part-time executive director and fundraiser because the budget wasn't there to hire me full-time.
Sure.
But within the first 6 or 8 months, we were raising enough money that I finally got to go full-time.
Wow.
Because of a grant.
Wow.
And so now we're just going crazy with it. We're really trying to grow the clinic. We're looking at some great potential programs down the road that might allow us to even add staff at some point.
How about that?
So
that's so wonderful. And again, making a difference in the community.
Yes.
Which we've really enjoyed getting to know the Dixon community, made a lot of friends in the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this has happened so suddenly with the Wonder Center and Science Museum.
Sure.
We're still getting to know everyone, including people like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But we really appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
You know, the clinic's been around for, this is our 19th year.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, and it was started by a couple of our local doctors who are well known in the community, Dr. Jeffrey Gordon and Dr. Dan Drennan.
Okay.
I think probably almost everybody in the county that's lived here for any length of time has seen one of those two doctors. But it was a need. They were both involved with First United Methodist Church, and at some point in time, back in I think 2005, there was a big exodus from not even an exodus. People got dropped from the Ten Care program.
Okay,
and the Dixon Ministerial Fellowship, you know, came to Dr. Gordon and Dr. Drennan and said, "Can you help us?"
Wow.
And they started the Dixon Community Clinic.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
About 19 years ago.
About 19 years ago.
Interesting. Okay, so you said that for generations your family has been here.
Yes.
And that you've been involved in a number of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me just a little bit more about the Safari Club.
Well, Safari Club, you know, I had been in the nonprofit conservation industry for most of my career. I started with the National Wild Turkey Federation and went to work for the NRA.
Okay.
And then ended up eventually with Safari Club International. And it was basically because the mission I felt like I was there to do was to raise money to help in whatever way I could. I just didn't know what exactly my mission was eventually supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's crazy because I actually, when I was in school, I never imagined that I would be speaking in front of hundreds or even thousands of people.
Right.
And I hated public speaking more than any course I took. And but, you know, the more that I got into it, the more I loved what I did and the fact that I was serving others.
Yeah.
And even in the wildlife conservation community, you know how important that is. The museum here is a testament.
Yes.
To how important conservation is.
It is. That's something that a lot of people don't think about. And then those who do, all of a sudden get this impression. There are many skeptics out there who look at wildlife conservation and they're like, well, this is something that these Christians will never be a part of, or that these conservatives will never address because they're all about just using up all of our fossil fuels.
Yeah.
There's so many misconceptions out there, right? When if we look at Christianity as a whole.
Yes.
It's based on principles. Many of those principles began in the book of Genesis. If we
Absolutely.
Go back to the book of Genesis, what we find is that God gives this dominion mandate.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm going to put mankind in charge of animals, right? In charge of nature, per se. But in charge of doesn't mean you abuse.
Right.
In charge of means that, sure, we're going to use things to our advantage, but that means that if we're doing a management job, a good management
yes.
job, then we're going to nurture, we're going to protect, we're going to conserve, we're going to do those types of things. Now, I lead an African photo safari to mm-hmm. South Africa every year. This year it's in September, and we take about 30 people, very small group. I book out an entire reserve, and we go out in game vehicles,
mm-hmm.
and we go see things like, you know, white rhinos. We
sure.
go out and we see things like hippos, giraffes, lions, a lot of weird mutations of things that,
sure.
You know, I'm talking about Blesbach and Hemsbach and impalas and kudus mm-hmm. and all sorts of amazing creatures. And then you also get this perspective that, well, if you're going out there hunting these animals, which some people do hunt them, that somehow you're abusing things. And then we have to look at the fact that you do have to control the number of animals in Africa.
Yes.
Because some species will take over an entire region and wreck the entire rest of the environment.
Absolutely. And you know, it's a real balancing act.
Yeah.
You know, Safari Club, you know, we used to be attacked all the time because people thought we were just a bunch of African hunters going
right.
out there and just eradicating species. Well, Safari Club actually helped
yes.
the continent of Africa in establishing management practices that not only made certain species thrive, it brought some species back from the brink of extinction.
Yes.
Because the native peoples will eradicate a species at some point.
Yeah.
And by creating these proper management practices, they were also learning that through the hunters, they could actually make money for their communities.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the fees that go to hunting in Africa end up covering the cost of building wells.
That's right.
Building schools, supporting a community.
Supporting the community, providing food for locals.
Yes.
And also providing conservation efforts through those hunts and through what the Safari Club is doing.
Sure. And, you know, they don't, you know, you don't bring the meat home.
Right.
The meat stays for the community.
Right.
The outfitter's fees that you pay there, much of those fees, the outfitter himself gets a small portion and the rest goes to serve the community.
Yes.
So it's an amazing organization, what they do, and you know, balancing out the management of the wildlife is critical to maintaining the environment.
It absolutely is. It all comes back to biblical principles.
Yes.
That if we are truly doing our job, then we're going to remember these principles. One last time, the Dixon Community Clinic, other clinics that are doing these types of things, how are you making a difference? How are you changing the narrative?
You know, we're getting it in the community. We're letting people know who we are. Yeah. And we're letting them know we are a faith-based clinic, that God is in everything that we do. And, you know, through the outreach that we do in the community, I think people see that we are making a difference for those who are in need.
The story of the Good Samaritan, providing for widows, orphans, providing for those in need, those who can't afford the care that they need.
Yeah,
those are all Christian principles. And as a faith-based clinic, you are providing some of those needs.
Yes.
For this local community.
Absolutely.
And for people much, much farther out, providing a pattern for those in the future.
And, you know, I think as what Jesus said is that what you do for the least of these, you do for me.
That's right. Absolutely. Richard, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your story, the story of your son, and the story of how you are making a difference, how you're changing the narrative. I think we need to have you back out for another program sometime.
Would love to do it. Happy to.
And thank you for joining us on Changing the Narrative. I'm David Reeves, and until next time, I want you to remember to keep looking up. Truly, the heavens declare the glory of God. Find us on all social platforms to stay informed. Watch Genesis Science Network 24/7 for free on Roku, Fire TV, and on our website. Visit the world's largest origins-based store, creationsuperstore.com. Plan your trip to the Wonders Center and Science Museum just outside of Nashville, Tennessee.